Welcome to Conversations with Doc Martin. This video series focuses on extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. Today is certainly no exception. We are joined by my friend Daniel Oikel. Born under the wide skies of Calgary's prairie, Dan has traveled all over the world, but his heart has always remained in Canada. By 21, he came out as an LGBT activist, and by 22, he was performing as the lead in the revival of musicals of Hair and then Who's Tommy, thus establishing himself as a local singer and performer, all while completing a degree in imaging communication at the University of Ottawa. Danielle's many things, singer, songwriter, poet, and visual artist, and he's recognized as one of the top five trendsetters in 2013 by Style Magazine, and The Sun Is Up was chosen as one of the top 10 songs in 2013 by Sound Seekers. In 2015, he founded Guillotine, where he creates bow ties and other original fiber art accessories for both men and women, and I am certainly one of his avid customers. So Dan, welcome to you today. Super excited that you're joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've known each other for quite a number of years. And yeah. And for those who know me in my day job as a dentist at Spear Education, I become known as the bow tie guy. And here is the muse behind my my brand, if you will, because I have to say, and even in my marketing for Metamorphosis, I'm always in a bow tie. And it's kind of wild because people always come up to me and they say, "What is that made of? Can I touch it? Is it hard?" Literally, that's what they say every single time.
In that order too, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, in that order. They're like, oh, and they go, "Can I touch it?" as they touch it, which is totally cool.
Yeah, they're already touching it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's the funniest thing. So ladies and gentlemen, here he is. So I was super excited to talk about you because I've actually talked about you in keynote addresses before. Because you were kind enough to sit down on a one-on-one interview, because I was very curious about your journey in creating Guillotine, and we'll get to that in a couple moments. But I just kind of wanted to ask you, just kind of in general, to share a little bit about your background relative to your passions for art and music, and how that's kind of manifested itself in your life.
For me, I was always raised in a very creative household. My mom is a musician and a spiritualist, and my father is a painter. And arts were always prevalent in the house. Mm-hmm. My sister was in ballet. We all took dance. We did visual arts as a family. So even from a really young age, it was always encouraged. And as I grew up and I started discovering that pretty much everything we enjoy as a species is created by an artist. You watch TV, you read a book, you see a sign, like all of those things, like it is such an intrinsic part of our experience of the world around us and our understanding of how things are to be explained. So, we take it for granted that the thing that lasts from a culture is its art. We look at Egypt and what are we looking at? Art. We look at ancient Greece. What are we looking at? Art. So I wanted to join that zeitgeist as a young person. And so moving forward, I studied more art. I went to private classes. I wanted to study image communication because my parents did give me some really good advice. They said, if you're going to be an artist, your degree should be about how to sell your art.
And that's really intuitive. Yeah.
Because that's the hardest part, right? Like for an artist, particularly starting out, is getting the sales, making money. I mean, we live in a capitalistic society, and I wish we didn't, as many artists are quite, Marxist in that way. But but we do. So you have to compete in that. And in order to do so as an artist, you have to learn how to market your work and explain to people in a way that they can understand why your work is important. Mm-hmm. And even though I create accessories and wearable pieces, I also do installation work and gallery work as well, and larger versions of the things that I make. So I found a nice balance where I can use expressive and more daring art at the same time as creating things that make money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm kind of curious to dive into that because I remember our interview quite a number of years ago now, rather vividly, around kind of your mindset around business and opportunity and how that fits in with your art. And so prior to 2015, because I totally want you to tell the story about how Guillotine came to be, because I think it's fantastic. You know, and so you're an artist at heart. You were born into an artistic family where it was encouraged, but there was this, shall we say, realism that we have to have food on the table. And so talk to me a little bit about kind of your early years and keeping your, shall we say, keeping the faith and keeping the optimism within your art, whether that be visual arts or other forms of media or performance art, to kind of keep going in a society that doesn't always support artists that Absolutely. Handily until you get to Hollywood or Bollywood or the West End or whatnot.
So. Until you're big, people have a tendency to ignore you.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that there's a lot of people that are working artists, like graphic right. designers. You have yep. cartoonists. You have, you know, not just the big people that are in Hollywood. Like one of my friends, he's working on the costumes for the new Star Trek series, Discovery. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like those are all artists. They're just, you know, it takes thousands of artists sometimes to bring something like Star Trek Discovery to yeah. the screen for people. And I knew that intrinsically when I was young, that there was lots of opportunity. The difficulty with something like art is getting recognized, having people acknowledge that your work is of equal or greater value than this work, and that's what you should be shown, right?
Sure,
and that
sure.
comes down to like how you market yourself. And for me, for like when I was younger, it wasn't always like positivity and, you know, right. moving forward with joy.
Right. And, that's why I asked the question.
Definite moments of like despair. And yeah. I just knew that I wasn't going to be a poor artist. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to be a poor artist. And if that means I just make art because I love to, and, but I don't want to be a starving artist. I don't want to do that. It doesn't mm-hmm. seem enjoyable to me. I'm not mm-hmm. bohemian in that way. And I have many of artist friends who do, and some of them make a lot more money than me, and they still look and live like bohemians, and it's because it's part of their identity.
Got it.
And that's great. But me, I wanted to make money. So there was like, and not, a, you know, I always thought I want to have just enough to have a good life, but not so much that I'm now under everyone's magnifying glass.
Sure.
You know, because that puts a whole bunch of new pressure on you. And that's something that developed as I got older, because I didn't, you know, fame when you're young feels amazing. But when you start getting older and you start to have more people demanding and putting pressure on you, that it raises the bar, not only just in a good way for you to continue working and improving, but sometimes in an emotionally bad way.
Mm-hmm.
So it can put a lot of pressure on you in a new way that you weren't maybe prepared for. And so now I see fame as a two-edged sword. And even though as an artist, your finances are very directly related to how popular you are, sure. is I do find that, you know, those times when I was younger and it was a different hurdle, as opposed to being like having people, you know, show up at your house unannounced or, you know, take liberties with you, because you're more in the public eye. When I was younger, I wasn't really in the public eye. So,
right.
and I was trying to be that. So the things that I learned back then about how to handle the day-to-day stresses of being an artist
mm-hmm.
through, you know, trial and error
sure.
Is really, I think something that I can still apply today mm-hmm. To new hurdles as I move forward. And a lot of that comes from finding time for yourself, finding time to decompress.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a meditator, that's great. Me personally, I pour myself a glass of wine, a little bit of substance, and then I go and, you know, drink my wine in
right.
the bathtub
right.
and listen to music. And I find that that's, to me, like my zen zone.
Sure.
And it resets me. And so when I was younger and I was struggling with, I worked in an all-night diner and I'd have like overnight shifts, and I was in university and I'm trying to get music out there and I'm going to auditions and I'm taking the bus to Montreal to audition for The Lion King. And I'm like, you know, it's like, and there you get rejection after rejection after rejection.
Mm-hmm.
It starts to wear on you and you start to have that feeling, like you asked in your question, whether or not this is something, you know, I need to go ahead with. How do I keep the faith? How do I, you know, and there's moments when you lose the faith.
Yeah,
and, absolutely. You know, there was even a time when I almost went into engineering at university because my mathematics scores were really high, and hence the music, because music and mathematics are the same thing.
Absolutely.
And it was the, you know, so I almost petered out a few times thinking, this is too hard. And I'm glad I didn't, because one of my friends said this to me later in life, and I wish I'd heard it. She had heard it from somebody, an older artist like I am now. And I now say it to younger artists when I'm talking to them, is if you keep going, one day you're the only one still going.
Oh, I love that.
That's how art works, right? Yeah. So eventually you get to a stage where you're the only one still working. And if someone needs a drummer, someone needs a singer, someone needs a musician, someone needs someone with experience, you now have a ton of experience. I don't do work anymore for exposure. I haven't done work for exposure for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'll do collaborations.
Sure.
But I think that the idea of doing something for exposure is for someone when they're 18, 19, and 20. Otherwise, you should be paying for the privilege of looking at this person's art.
Absolutely.
Whether it's a visual art show or a movie or buying their music.
Absolutely.
This stuff wasn't made for free, and we should be, you know, supporting them financially. And so I tell those younger artists that, I'm like, you need to just remember that by keeping the faith, simply by showing up and just doing it every day, eventually all those other people who don't have the staying power will pitter away and do something else. If they don't love it enough, they will do something else mm-hmm. with their life. And that's fine. It's because they didn't have necessarily the soul of an artist, that you were willing to sacrifice everything. And it's not just the soul of an artist, it's the soul of anyone who loves something and is passionate about it. So like the soul of a doctor, the soul of a pilot, the soul of a person who goes after the goal that they want, no matter the cost.
Absolutely.
You know, and eventually you're the only one.
I think that's fantastic. I think it's amazing advice. And, you know, it's even speaking to me right now, because you and I have had this conversation, and even this very platform that you and I are talking on right now. And it's, you know, this is absolutely a passion to me, to bring people to the table. And, you know, right now, as we record this, are there many people watching this? No, but I have dozens and dozens of videos out there. And one of these days, they're going to finally see these videos. And I think it's an absolute great metaphor for what you were just talking about. And it's a great metaphor for life too, because so often as we get older, people say, oh my gosh, you're so good at this. I wish I could be like you, or I wish I could, you know, coach like you, or speak like you, or sing like you. It's like, well, you can, you just need to keep going. And so I think that's a fantastic life lesson. And I love the fact we're talking today for a whole bunch of reasons, but I also love the fact today that I'm speaking to an artist that has said the same thing as the, you know, speakers and the coaches and the therapists and the CEOs and the attorneys. Everybody says the same thing, and it's super simple, but nobody ever said it was easy, right?
No, it's simple, but it's hard.
Yeah, it's really, really, really hard. And so I would like maybe to take you back and maybe you have something in mind, maybe you don't, relative to one of those moments where, you know, something didn't go right. And, you know, you were thinking, oh my gosh, maybe it's time to give up the ship. And how did you kind of, to go with the same idea, right the ship from that thought process when something pretty, pretty bad happened? What kind of bubbles do your brain?
I'm trying to think of like a really, well, you said really bad. So I'm like, I don't,
or
I think of something, an easier, like a random hurdle. I was on Canadian Idol and I made it to Toronto, and I'm competing in Toronto, and I was eliminated. Mm-hmm. So when you're like 24 and your dream is to be a singer, and you make it out of the like tens of thousands of people who audition, you make it to Toronto, you're competing for that like really hardcore week that they do at first to narrow it mm-hmm. down to like the top mm-hmm. 10. Mm-hmm. And then you get eliminated and you're sent home. And then that's just it. It's like an end of it's like, I don't know, watching fireworks without the fireworks.
Yeah.
So like I did all, and it's really brutal work. And I was, I remember coming home and I was really quite, you know, dejected. And I was like, well, maybe I'm just not you know, maybe this isn't something I should be investing in. Maybe I should just, you know, I know I really want to do it, but maybe I just don't have it. Like, maybe it's just not what I'm like, you know, it's not I'm not good enough.
Right.
And so I remember, so, you know, I felt sorry for myself for a while. And then eventually I got this other opportunity. It was for, some stupid karaoke thing. And I was like, okay, I'll do this karaoke competition just because it's fun. And they have some like $1,000 prizes and things like this. Right. So I was like, okay, well, I'm 24. Right. So I'm gonna, I could use that money. And I was like, yeah, I could do this karaoke thing at 11 o'clock at night in a bar. And so I did this, I went all the way in, I came in third in Canada, and that came with recording time.
Oh, wow.
And so then I now have free recording time. So I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe, you know, it wasn't me, and it was just a series of things. And so it was literally just accepting that doors are opening for you, even if they don't look like a door that you want, but they're going in the right direction. I made a rule to myself then that when those kind of doors open and they don't cost me anything to do them, take that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, is that something I run around telling people? It's like, I came in third in a karaoke competition in Canada. I'm like, no.
I didn't even know that. And we were prepping
for this. It's not on my resume.
Talking about,
but because you wouldn't put that on your resume. I'm like, I'm now a recording artist. You know, I've had 3 albums. So it's like, you know, but how that my first recording time was given to me because I won it in a karaoke competition. So, and that was after being kicked off of Canadian Idol.
That's right.
Amazing. And then I realized that, you know, when you're older and you start looking back and watching those episodes and seeing the stuff that, you know, happened, you're like, I was kicked off for being too Broadway, which at the time is code for too gay. And it was like, oh, so it's not really that I wasn't good enough, but it was 2004, right? Like, the world was a different place than it is in 2021 now.
Yeah, it's true.
And being gay is a very different thing. And I was out and proud then, and they didn't want that on their show.
Interesting.
Even though there was basically half the people there were gay,
right?
It was just, you know,
right.
They were better at hiding it,
right?
I guess.
And the Adam Lamberts of the world come around, and the Clay Aikens of the world come around, relatively.
Exactly. Start thrilling us in. You have Lady Gaga and Madonna and Cher and everyone who's been fighting for gay rights, and it starts to become a mainstream thing in music. Now you have Lil Nas, right? So you're like, you know, it comes full circle. It's just, you know, I was early for that boat. And had I decided that was it and I give up now because it's hard, you know, then none of those other beautiful things that happened in music would have ever happened to me.
Absolutely. You know, you're making me think of something I haven't thought of in many years. And, you know, I know you're familiar with the fact that I'm a dentist by training and became disabled. And, you know, I literally sat at home for 13 months between ending clinical practice and what ended up spawning into a really very fulfilling, and I'm very humbled and grateful to be in the position that I am today. But, you know, what you made me think of that I haven't thought of in years, because it's been a number of years, is just that feeling of dejection, that kind of moment where it's like, am I going to keep going on? Because, you know, this was 2000, ironically enough, it was 2003. So around the same time frame. And this was before the internet is what it is today. And just getting door after door after door closed in your face. And then, you know, thinking about, well, every connection is an opportunity. And then having this friend, my dear friend, Dr. Sharon Siegel, give me a call out of the blue. Not so much out of the blue, we were in touch, but give me a call out of the blue. And she said, oh my gosh, I think I found a job for you. They're looking for you, Martin, was her words. Yeah. And it's all that hard work, all that rejection, all the lessons that you learn that really spurn you and propel you forward that you think are just crappy life happenings at the time. But in essence, they're wonderful life lessons that happen at the time.
If you're willing to learn.
If you're willing to learn, that's correct. That's correct. Because I would never be sitting here in Phoenix, Arizona today if I didn't take the opportunity that my friend Sharon gave to me that day on the phone. I have this vivid memory of myself on the phone, the house phone with the cord, talking to her in my kitchen. And I'm like, wait, stop. What do you mean? Who, why, what, where? Florida? What? Yeah, because I was living in Maryland. So I think that's absolutely fantastic. And I think I remember too, correct me if I'm wrong, when we spoke a number of years ago, when I originally interviewed you, we spoke about your making a decision not to go to New York. And So do you want to tell that story about a little show that people might know of?
Rent?
Yeah.
My friend was cast. At that point, I was doing a lot of shows. So mm-hmm. I was, they had an open call mm-hmm. for Rent in mm-hmm. New York. Mm-hmm. And so then I got the call to go down because I fit like the bill for the lead, the redhead guy. Mm-hmm. And it's either him or the rock star guy in the two characters, right? I can't remember the names currently at the moment. They're like, boop, out of my head, but you get the idea.
Yes.
And so I was like, okay, so I can technically audition for two of them, if not just like core.
Right.
And so I was going to go and I was all prepped and I just decided that at that point, like I had other opportunities. It was going to mean that I was going to have to quit my school. I was not going to be able to finish my university degree if I took this job. I was going to have to leave everything I knew and all the people that I knew. I was in a relationship. That person wouldn't have been able to come with me. It was going to be a huge life change based on a job that is very highly and incredibly demanding and in a city and a country that I don't exist in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so all this to say, I eventually chose not to go to the specific call that I got invited to. And because of that, I ended up getting hair and I ended up getting Tommy here mm-hmm. in town. Well, not here, but at the Great Canadian Theatre Company. I now live in Montreal. But it was, And so I ended up with all these new doors that opened for me. Mm-hmm. And so just saying no to a specific opportunity doesn't mean that you're never going to get an opportunity again.
Yeah.
Right? Like a lot of times when you're young, you think you have this sense that it's now or never.
Yeah.
And it's like, and sometimes that can be true, but it's usually not true.
Right. Right.
And it was, sorry. Yeah. My just flipped out for you. So I chose not to do that audition and it ended up being the right choice.
Yeah.
And two of my friends have done those different shows on the touring scale and also stuff like this. And they're brutal. They like, they don't care about you. The company does not love you.
Yeah. Well, and if I remember, the reason why I brought it up is Rent was not a household name at the time. This was when it was opening, if I recall correctly. So, you know, you turned down an opportunity for all the right reasons for you that turned out to be this juggernaut of a show.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why I bring it up is because that's okay. Because that's the way you wanted to navigate your life. And your life is, you know, turned out in a wonderful way, being able to do what you want to do, the way you want to do it in your terms, which is a blessing that many people either don't have or don't have the courage to have.
Or they don't feel they're entitled to.
Yeah. Or deserve, absolutely. Which is really, really, really one of the many reasons why I wanted to talk to you today. Because I knew that about you. And so what I'd love to do is kind of turn the page now, because around this time is actually when you and I met. Around this time is when you launched Guillotine. And
I was just launching it, I think, when we
met. You were, because I remember we met in Mexico on a vacation. And I remember you talking about this and I was like, yeah, whatever. And you gave me the information, the website. And I'm not one of those people that says I'm going to do something and not do it. And I went on there and it was literally 6 months after I decided to become the bow tie guy as a branding thing. By the way, since that point of time, I've come to the conclusion that it's not what you wear, but who you are. But that's a whole nother life journey.
Oh yeah, branding.
But I would love for you to tell the viewers kind of how Guillotine came to be, because it is such an amazing story of being open, aware, and listening to the world when an opportunity presents itself. Because your story and Guillotine as it is today could have gone in so many different directions, but it didn't, because you were open. So can you kind of tell the story of kind of how that all happened and what you were doing and how you created the first one and so forth?
Yeah, I wanted something to wear. Like literally, exactly. It was literally that simple.
Yes.
I started men's clothes being boring. And
yes.
I was working as a fiber artist, like I've been doing for, you know, since I was a child, really. I started selling work at 13. Mm-hmm. So, and now I'm 41. So yeah, it's a long time. And I was working in this medium and I was doing a series of dolls.
Yep.
And I wanted something to wear. So I said, oh, well, I can make a bow tie out of this this polymer that I'm working with. So I did. Mm-hmm. And then I wore it to a gallery show and everyone was like, oh, are you selling those too? And I'm like, no, but yes. So I just started saying yes.
I love
all
it.
The time, because it's like inside you're like, you know, the little business brain starts clicking and going like, okay, I've had like 8 people this evening want to buy my tie off my neck. And then I sold it.
Yep.
So the last person, I was like, oh my God, okay, I can sell these.
Mm-hmm.
So I made like 50 of them.
Yep.
And I made a little website that was a link off of my danielgoivel.com, my artist website. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be enough. I thought it would just like, whoop, and then piddle out.
Yeah.
And it didn't. It just went, kept going, going, going. And then they crashed the website. And so I had to have a new website. And then I was having like I had a waiting list of like a month to get a tie at one point. Like
awesome.
I tried like 3 different websites until I found something that was strong enough to like hold the capacity of the people that were like breaking down the door for this.
Yeah.
And I started doing live shows at like artist showcases and things like this of the brand. And right after my like 3rd show or something, I think that's when I met you. So it was like, it was just starting. It was all that same year. And it was like, just, and I just decided to accept those opportunities. And since then I've had shows from that brand in New York, in Las Vegas, in London, England. I'm, you know, in collections all over the world. And I've done, I did a very high profile South African wedding that was photographed for Vogue. Like it was all from making something for myself to wear. And then when the doors started opening, accepting them.
Yep.
Right. Like, and saying like, okay, I can do that. I can walk through that door. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and as I said, when it doesn't cost you anything, when you, like a lot of people are scared of success.
Yep.
And they put roadblocks in their way that don't exist.
Yep.
And I have been guilty of doing that. And this time I wasn't going to do that. I'm like, you know, ever since I made that rule to myself to accept opportunities that arise and take them, my life changed.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, they don't always look like the opportunities that you want. I didn't, you know, wake up one day and decide I'm going to structure and build an entire bow tie company and an accessories company, because it was originally just one product, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was like, you know, it expanded as I started manipulating my other fiber arts to be wearable.
Absolutely.
And so it was I accepted the doors that, you know, opened, and I walked through them, and then all of a sudden I had a business. And that's how you do it. Some people refer to it as pivoting. Some people refer to it as like all sorts of different things in business, but really what it is just being open to what other people, their input on your creative process. That's sometimes really hard to accept. So when people are coming, they say, I want it more this way, or I want it more that way, or I want it more this way, instead of being self-righteous and wanting to say, well, this is the way I do it, you either like it or you don't.
Yep.
It's like, no, take criticism, learn, grow, expand. You don't always have to agree with them, and you don't always have to do it.
Yeah.
But if someone is, you know, it, and it's from a good source.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Then listen. Absolutely. And so I did. And Guillotine, here we are.
It's amazing. And by the way, I want to thank you publicly for also now adding cufflinks to your repertoire, because I love cufflinks. I always wear cufflinks. I buy these shirts that, you know, you could button or wear a cufflink that don't fold over, which is kind of important here in Phoenix because it's hot. So you don't have that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But,
yeah.
But it's kind of become a joke because I'll come and clients will be like, where's your bow tie? I'm like, here it is.
Yeah.
So I want you to know that. So I'm still representing, even if I don't have a bow tie on.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's, it's such a wonderful life lesson for listening to the universe. I mean, what the tagline on this whole channel is, life speaks to you. And if you think it doesn't, you're not listening. And yeah. So you are truly an example of that for everybody about listening to things. And one of these days I'm going to get you to do to come down to Phoenix for that one show that we talked about.
I would love
the art fair. It's brilliant. I think you would fit in like perfectly there. And so it's been a rip-roaring success. It's, you know, ended up going places that you never would have imagined. And then the pandemic hits. And so we were talking about this the other day before we started filming or talking about filming. And here again, your mindset and your ability to pivot or listen to the world, because for those of you who may not be aware that are listening, the entire formal clothing industry, whether that be suits or gowns or accessories, just disappeared in the pandemic because nobody was dressing up. And so here you are selling fiber art in the form of bow ties and cufflinks and other accessories for men and women. And then the bottom drops out. And so let's talk a little bit about that. So talk to us a little bit about what your experience has been. How you pivoted with those beautiful teddy bears that you're now making.
Yes.
And what you're starting to see as a world dig out of this. So talk to us about your pandemic experience.
Well, this is one of the ties. So
yes.
For the people who are watching. Yeah. So it's the silk behind and the sculpture in front.
Yeah.
And there's no painting. That's all the clays are individually dyed and sculpted together. So that's the process.
Yeah.
And when the pandemic hit, it really did like end our business. Like it was like, and literally we had just come off one of the biggest sale years we've ever had to nothing.
Yeah.
Crickets.
Yeah.
Like one person on the website in a day.
Wow.
And we're like, what do we do? And then I like ruined my back. And
right.
So I had like 13 months of rehab and spinal surgery and a whole bunch of stuff like this. So then I couldn't even sit to sculpt or work. And so that couldn't have come at a better year considering the beginning of the year was basically, you know, and we thought it was just going to be a blip, right? And then things were going to get back to normal relatively quick at the beginning. We all thought it was going to be like 3 months and it was going to go. So I thought, okay, so I still had shows lined up, but now we're into like year two and it's still not back to normal. So about August, I was like, okay, well, the bow ties aren't moving. So I did two big sales, and I usually do sales. And those did really well because people were stocking up for when our prices went back to normal. And so that was nice for like, but it was only basically regular customers that were coming back, you know? So we weren't gaining new ground. And so I was like, well, I need to pivot. I need a new product. And I was like, well, what makes people feel like good? I'm like, I collect, I'm an archetophile. I like teddy bears and I also like dolls and I like things that are like, what's the proper way to say it? It's like anthropomorphized. And so I was like, well, I've done dolls. The issue with dolls is dolls have a tendency to creep some people out, even though other people will love them. We have something built into us in our lizard brain where we respond to things that look like a human face, but not close enough. So we actually have a revulsion to those. So it's a natural impulse so that we don't breed with species that we aren't incompatible with. And it's a whole psychological thing. Anyway, it's also the reason why people don't necessarily like all dolls and sculptures and those kind of things creep some people out. So I was like, well, what else do I make? I was like, well, I do like fiber toys, but not for children. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll do some fine teddy bears. So I did some beautiful teddy bears and like camel and real fur and Then they started to sell and I started to do the bigger ones. And then I like, well, I need something that's an accessory. How? So I turned them, my little, they're little Victorian ones, right? With all the joints. So
cute.
And we're famous for our silks, right? So I use the silk remnants to do the paws. Mm-hmm. And the little eyes are all done with freshwater pearls.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all properly beautiful hardware. And mm-hmm. they're bag charms. So as soon as I did the bag charms, people were loving them. And I, of course, always use the like high-end materials when I'm working on a product.
Sure.
So it's, it'll last. Like, yeah. I don't want to create something that's looking in the...
I was like, okay.
Hi! He's like, leave me, I want to go on. The, so yeah, so then I pivoted that way, and then that started taking off.
Yeah.
And because the name was already there.
Right.
So I just needed to start giving them something that maybe they would buy during a pandemic. And since I'm not planning to make sweatpants, I was like, what can I do? And that was really what it was. Like,
that would have done well too, by the way, the sweatpants, but you know.
Crazy. I also did, because my TikTok like skyrocketed, which was completely unexpected.
Well, it's not for me because it's hysterical and it's so much fun. And I'm going to have all of your links below so everybody can follow you on whatever platform floats their boat, but you've got
to be fast just to warn you.
Oh, it is, but it's hysterical. It's wonderful. Anyway, so back to Teddy.
So I did, as a visual artist as well, I did a whole series of, like I do this gossip segment, right? And so I sometimes draw out the funniest gossip things and I flip the images like a book. So then some of those got published into a book. And then I did the images, I started putting them on t-shirts and stuff like this. And then those started selling in mugs. So it was about seeing an opportunity and taking it. And yes, I don't make those mugs, but they do have my art on them.
Right.
You know, so instead of me thinking that, you know, people have often said in the arts, like, oh, that's selling out or that's doing this. I'm like, no, I paid my mortgage with mugs this month, you know, and I could be a prima donna and say, I'm a professional artist for 27 years. I don't do that. And I'm like, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
That is ego. That has nothing, you know, I have large projects that are on the back burner right now because I'm waiting for the world to open up again.
Right.
And in the meantime, take opportunities that are around. Like, there are so many opportunities, even during a pandemic, if you're looking for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that's an allegory for life, isn't it? There's so many opportunities in life if you're looking for them. I so often hear from people, you know, I can't do this because I'm doing that. And one of my very first guests on this show is my dear friend, Justin Patton, who I met originally. He was my coach. He was my life coach, my executive coach. And, you know, even this channel as an example, I'd love to use because, you know, this is a pure passion project. Do I have the time to do everything? No. So I have people that help me. And it's not that, you know, if you're doing one thing, it doesn't take away from the other. You know, I had my CEO on this program and he was excited to be on this program and he supports what I do. I think people put so many limitations on their opportunities, their abilities, the things that they could go for in life if they would just be open to life and to be listening to life as they go upon their day. And everywhere and everything, there's opportunity. And even some of the guests I've had on the show, by the way, were by listening to life where they're friends of friends. And I saw them post something with this friend on Facebook and I click over and I see Tim Lee as the director of philanthropy for the American Cancer Society. Next thing you know, he's an upcoming guest. So it's all about being open to opportunities. And I'm just so, if I may be so bold, so proud of you for continuing that open-mindedness, because I want to go back to something you said. It was, or something that you shared. And I don't know if our viewers, I know they heard you, but I don't know if they picked up on it. It's a global pandemic and your back goes out and you're literally filming videos on the floor.
I was hospitalized for 14 days. I couldn't walk.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was paralyzed. Yeah.
And so many people would have gone down a road of, this isn't for me. Nothing's working out. It's never going to be the same. I can't do this. But that's not what you did. What you did was you continued the beauty that is you to look for opportunities to then, you know, move forward in life. And I wanted you on the show anyway, but the more I thought about it, I was like, no, I've got to have him on the show, because you are such an inspiration when you really look at what you've been able to do in your life. And it's not the accomplishments, Dan, it's not. It's the openness to viewing what's possible. That's the
view. I stopped seeing the world as a pie and I started seeing the world as a snowstorm.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if you're looking for like a snowflake in a snowstorm, just put out your hands.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And stop seeing, as you said, like it's one or the other. It's not a pie.
Yeah.
Your life isn't a pie. There isn't a limit to what you can do.
Absolutely.
There isn't a limit to what you can achieve or what you can get or what you deserve.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can really go out and just reach out and grab it. It might not be the handful of snow you wanted.
Yeah.
But each one of those, they're worth looking at. They're, each one is unique and beautiful if you take those opportunities. And you just have to see, you have to change your mindset from being downtrodden and acted upon, and start seeing yourself as an active participant in your life, even when you're on your back in a hospital and the doctors aren't listening to you.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, it's,
yeah,
you can say, okay, well, then fine, this is it, right? And you're like, no, no, I'm not willing to put up with this. This is not going to be the end of me. I'm not going to stop doing art just because I ran into a blip and I currently can't sit long enough. I made an entire collection of teddy bears, a whole series, new series of boutonnieres, all while I was bedridden.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I even published a book while I was bedridden, you know, and maybe some people think of those things as being, you know, an overachiever. And I'm like, no, I don't see it as overachieving. Yes, they're accomplishments, like you said, but it's not about actually anything coming to a fruition. It's about the process. If you can actually, I mean, people say that to you all the time, I'm sure, that it's not about the end goal, it's about the process. And it sounds like, you know, bullshit. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's really, really true. If you can learn to enjoy the process, your life will be so much better. Yes. Because the end goal, you, once you get there, there's always a new end goal.
Yes.
There's never, it's a journey that doesn't end until it ends. So
So
if you think that once I get to this level, I'm now going to be happy, you're going to be greatly deluding yourself.
Well, do you realize, by the way, that you're literally espousing what some of the giants in positive psychology talk about all the time?
I have no idea. I don't listen to anything like that. Yeah.
John Accord talks about it in his book. Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, who was a guest on the show, talks about this. And so it's all about looking at life as a journey, not a destination. And so what Sean Accord talks about in his book is the concept that, you know, if you keep looking toward a goal, then your goalposts keep changing.
Yep.
And so, you know, if anyone on here has not seen Sean Accord's TED Talk that's been viewed millions and millions and millions of times, I recommend you go see it, because
I haven't seen it. So
the guy, he is hysterical. First of all, second of all, he's so insightful. He's an academic at heart. He's a Harvard trained. And that book, The Happiness Advantage, actually is what started everything for me. And I, in fact, I've reviewed his book on this channel and so forth. So what you just said is such important advice about not focusing on the destination, but the journey. So this has been such a fun experience. It's so nice to talk to friends who inspire me and bringing them to the world. So I think in closing, and I think we could kind of leave it where we just did, but I like to ask this kind of question in closing, which is this: if you you know, after we got off here and you ended up talking to somebody that didn't feel like they had any opportunities and felt like they were stuck and didn't know where to go, what would you say to them?
I actually almost really just did have this conversation with one of my artist friends who was like, yeah, struggling. And what I said to them was, I was more specific directly to what they were dealing with, but to make it more universal, is that remember why you do the things that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing them for the love of doing it? Or are you doing it for accolades? Are you doing it? There's no wrong answer. And so maybe, you know, just someone saying, oh, well, you know, I put video, you know, shirtless pictures online because I like to have people click and like it, and they feel guilty saying that out loud. I'm like, don't say that out loud. That's a dopamine hit. You are craving dopamine. There's nothing wrong with a human species, like an animal, seeking dopamine.
Yeah.
So if you're getting dopamine from that and it is uplifting to you, then that's good for you. So look for those things in your life and be honest with yourself about why you want to do the things that you want. Why do you want what you want? Why do you want a bigger house? Why do you want another car? Why do you want that fancy dress? Why do you want that job? Why do you want to do this for a living? Mm-hmm. Why, you know, and so therefore it'll help reflect back on why you feel that there is no opportunities and nothing's open, because maybe your desire for the reason why you want to do it and the thing itself aren't necessarily aligned.
Yeah. Wonderful
advice. So you might be wanting to go and like the dopamine hit. What you're looking for is a dopamine hit in that particular instance. This wasn't the friend. I'm using that because it's a really simple example.
Sure.
You know, putting a post on Facebook or putting a video on YouTube, or, you know, it's for the dopamine hit. You get the bump.
Yep.
And if you can't admit to yourself that that's why you're doing it, then you're also missing other opportunities, because there's other opportunities for a dopamine hit.
Yep.
Right. So it's like, if you're making art simply so people will give you accolades, well, then anytime you make art that doesn't get an accolade, you're now going to feel rejected and hurt and useless, and there's no opportunities and everything, because you're not looking at the two things that you want, the thing that your activity and your actual goal for doing them are not aligned. So if it was just accolades, you can do lots of different things to get accolades. You know, but if it was actually the art, then it doesn't matter if you get accolades for it, because the process in doing the piece was enough to provide you with a sense of accomplishment, and it doesn't come outside of your body. And there's no right or wrong answer, but the trick is to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
If you can't be honest with yourself about like who you are and what you want from this existence, then you're never going to achieve it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Right. Because you don't know what that it is.
You haven't been honest enough with yourself to tell yourself that the it is this, or the it, like my friend who wants to be a model, you know? And I was like, why? Because you felt unattractive, and now you want people to tell you you're attractive. Well, there's other ways to do that. You don't have to get into a really difficult industry where, trust me, they're going to make you more self-conscious than less self-conscious.
Yeah, it's true.
And so it's like, maybe being an athletic model, or maybe going into bodybuilding, or maybe going, like, there's lots of avenues for you to pursue feeling and improving that wound from your childhood of being feeling unattractive without having to go that one route that you keep getting rejected on. It's like, so yeah, you're 5'7", you're not going to be a model. That's it. It doesn't matter how beautiful you are.
Yeah.
You're too short.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only one Kate Moss for a reason.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
And so, yeah, you're going to, then it's just more rejection, and then you feel low, and then you feel like, because you set, as I said, you set the destination and the process, they're not going the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's fantastic. Well, listen, Dan, thank you so very much for your time. We're going to post all of your links in the information below, TikTok, Guillotine, all that, all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, for everybody out there, I certainly hope you enjoyed our little conversation today. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe button and click notifications so you don't miss out on our next wonderful guest. And lastly, remember, life speaks to you. And if you think it doesn't, you're not listening. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.